Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals. Save big money
at Menards. Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
What's poppin', everybody? Hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin and I am your host. Here with me today is my brother Jay, who will be in every episode.
That's me. Still not yet the one true host, but one day.
Jordan tells me that you made up significant ground.
Did I now?
Yes, you did. I feel like I remember
in last
week's... Way
to go, Jazzy J fans.
I think I remember in last week's episode, there was a moment where we were discussing the current standings, and we made too hard of an argument for you. But what is interesting that has developed on the front of who is the host of Popcorn Culture,
yeah,
is it almost feels like there is this underdog teeter-totter that you and I are now on, where in the Jay versus Ben's, we have always joked that there is like Jay fan out there.
Jay fan, because I'm the quote-unquote overdog.
You are the overdog, yeah. Right. Nobody roots for the overdog.
Right.
You are the
except Jay fan.
You are the New England Patriots of Harry Potter trivia games when it comes to Jay versus Ben.
So you're the New England Patriots of hosting this podcast?
Well, I don't want to brag, but...
But roll tide.
If you guys are ever wondering how we determine who is the host, over on our Patreon, patreon.com/popcornculture, we have three tiers. Each of them effectively allows you to cast a vote for who is that week's host. They're all the same value. At $5, you can be host Buzzy B, host Jazzy J, or host neither, where the first 15 seconds of the episode will just be dedicated to you and your thoughts.
What a terrible way to start the episode.
It's going to be really funny if one day it like, I feel like I've almost sold it a little bit.
It would take such like a coordinated assault on the Patreon, in which case I'd also be so proud of our patrons, but please don't do it.
You know, we're just putting seeds into their,
I know, what are we doing,
into their kernel minds.
What are we doing? We're planting little kernels in the little kernels. Man, are we undermining ourselves? I feel like I should stop talking about it.
Maybe you should.
Maybe we should. Ben, you have a corny joke for us.
I absolutely do. How do you make a candle really happy?
Get lit. Wax on.
Wax on. What a good, valiant effort.
Am I dancing around it at all?
Not so bad. You blow it out. It will be delighted.
It would be delighted.
You get it? Because it's no longer lit.
This to me speaks to the opposite of what a candle wants. A candle does not want to be blown out. A candle wants to be lit.
No, it'll be delighted.
No, a candle wants to be... A candle is serving its purpose when aflame. It is just dormant and wait. It's like a toy that's not played with to have an unlit candle.
So... just a happy little flame. Yeah. To be honest with you, I have a candle on my desk at home, my work from home desk.
Yeah.
And it has brightened my life.
Literally?
Literally.
Wow.
I mean,
pun intended.
Not intended. No, just it has been the funniest thing where adding this very small luxury object into the room with me brings me an unexpected amount of joy.
Oh, that's funny. I, once upon a time, my wife is a fan of the Bath and Body Works candles.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, so like once a year or several times a year, they'll do like 3 for $22 or something like that.
Ooh, yeah.
I know, right? Oh my gosh, scoop them up while you can. But she would, you know, want to include me in on the fun.
Yeah.
And so she would always like try and find like a good what we call mandel, which is a man candle.
Man candle, yeah.
Yeah, so not like some fruity, beachy scent or something. You know, it smells like the woods or armpits or something.
Or armpits.
Those are
that's
it.
That, it seems like you went from like something that could like logically be a satisfying smell to just like straight locker room.
I know. God, who wants a locker room candle?
No one. Literally no one.
It must exist out there. But so anyway, the one that I landed on that I liked was called Mahogany Teakwood. And so I got this candle and I would like bring it in and I would sit it on my desk at work. And then, you know, I would light it so my office would smell nice.
No, surely, yeah.
Right, you know, you gotta have a smell. You gotta define your space or whatever.
Gotta make sure it smells like armpit.
It did not smell like armpit. It smelled like wood of some kind. Whatever mahogany teak wood smells like, that's what it was. And to me, this was like such a, oh, what a great way to bring up the ambiance of my office. But I look back and I think, was I making the whole floor smell a certain way? Like, it didn't even occur to me that it might bother other people, or that, like, what was the impression I was truly giving off by having this candle on my desk? I don't know.
Interesting.
I don't know.
So this really, like, racked you a little bit.
Well,
like,
only much further after the fact.
Very retroactively,
like,
okay.
Yeah, like, in the moment, I was like, I've got a candle. This is awesome.
Well, that's the thing, though, because I feel like that's the case with anybody who wears, like, excessive amounts of cologne or perfume.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, there are people who are really big into their scent. Like, it's
yeah,
just as much a part of like their outfit as like your sneakers might be, or
but
something.
But you never not scent up.
Yeah, exactly. You never not. And I think what's always blown my mind is like, you know, when you get in an elevator after someone who's like really like rolled around in it, and you're like, this elevator still smells like that
cologne.
Person's, yeah, cologne or perfume. And for the most part, I don't really take a particular issue in it. I'm usually in awe of the fact that they're able to do that, because I don't wear a lot. I do wear cologne, but I don't wear a lot of it. And I feel like in general, it's mostly just an extension of like my deodorant.
Yeah.
Like, you know, speaking of armpits, it's mostly
see,
like,
we got there.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, if you are close enough to me, it's supposed to be like a reassuring scent, not like of,
yeah,
you know, just general body odor,
mm-hmm,
armpit. And when these people like walk out though, I'm like, how much did they put on?
Too much.
That they are able to like literally leave a walking cloud of like musk. I want to know what is happening behind closed doors,
yeah,
because it is like an unfathomable amount of like transferable air scent into different locations,
yeah,
for an extended period of time.
Right. So I think what these people are suffering from in a big way, there's two things. There's, first of all, nose blindness.
Yes.
Which is, after, this happens even with your own deodorant, I think.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah,
once you've started wearing a certain cologne or perfume for a while, you will stop being able to smell it on you.
Right.
And so you'll think, I need more because I can't smell it.
Right, okay.
Right, so you'll over-apply, which is problem number one. Problem number two is that it sounds like these people are putting the cologne and or perfume on the outside of their clothing.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
And I believe the proper way to apply cologne is to your bare skin.
To your bare skin.
Beneath the clothing, because what happens is on your skin, it will continue, like it'll vapor off of,
right,
your clothes pretty quickly, but on, it's intended to be on your skin, and then it will continue to smell throughout the day.
Is this why like you frequently see people like putting it on their wrists and doing this sort of like handcuff rub together thing? You know what I'm talking about?
Exclusively a perfume thing.
Just perfume.
I don't think
you're not doing that every morning. No, me neither.
Where do you, okay, let me ask you this. Where do you apply your cologne?
When you
spritz up.
Spritz up. So it's usually, so like after getting out of the shower, I will like put it just like on like my chest, and then usually on like the back of my neck, I guess.
Or the back of your neck.
Like here.
Ah.
Oh, I'm pointing to the, like, right where, like, my hairline meets my neck.
Why there?
I have no idea. I was told that that's a good spot.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I would say I don't do the back of my neck, but I also just hit the chest.
Just the chest, yeah.
The chest.
So,
pre-shirt.
The thing is, though, is that This is like one of those things where very frequently I think it's very easy to not understand the culture behind something to the point where it's like you could see, like this happens to me a lot of times, like with like the Harley Davidson community of people that are like super into like the black, the orange, the leather, and like the super loud bikes and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's a huge population of people and they're all like, they all really like the same types of like, maybe like their dog might have like a studded collar or something like
right.
that. Like it has a very distinct style to it. And I have found myself at periods of my life, like feeling like I'm on the outside of an idea, looking at it and sort of being able to recognize the unusual nature of it as it pertains to any other outfit that someone may have like walked into my aquarium shop wearing. Mm-hmm. You know, most people don't walk in with chains and leather and you
right.
know, big, thick, heavy boots and stuff like that. But certainly plenty of people did. But then at other points in my life, I have found myself stepping across the line and then becoming one of the people inside of one of these like ideas where all of
right.
a sudden, like I was the guy who was doing CrossFit.
Right.
And I had formerly been the person observing people who did CrossFit.
People who do CrossFit. Do you know how you can tell who they are? Because they'll tell you immediately.
Let me tell you about my workout of the day.
Yeah.
My WOD.
Yeah. Nothing wrong with doing CrossFit.
No, nothing wrong with any of these things. But so the thing is that there must be like a populace of people out there that are really like that do appreciate the effort that goes into a well-curated like scent.
Yeah.
So where like my perception of the you know person who leaves their scent inside of the elevator after they've left it is that the sole tactic involved here is excessive use. Like that's the only thing in my mind that I could possibly imagine would allow for that to happen. But like what if there's actual like layering of the scents where it's like where people actually know that, ooh, yeah, you have to have like this kind of oil from this particular type of tree that pairs super nicely with this insect's saliva that makes this other thing, which gives a polychromatic bond between the scents and
wow,
allows
just making
for
up words now.
Silk, spider silk.
It's interesting that you immediately
integration
try and
of vapors
rationalize the entire situation. Where my mind, if I were to get in an elevator and I could still smell it, it's not that like it is just straight up improper use.
See, that's the thing though. Is I think it must not be.
No, I think it definitely is improper use.
Really?
I'm so sure of it.
Oh, fascinating.
Yeah.
Fascinating. Okay, see, so my thinking, and I don't even know, I think there was like one season of, we watched The Bachelor and The Bachelorette, there was one season where I feel like one guy's like job title was a colonosaurus.
Colonosaurus.
That's
one who eats cologne? Makes cologne. Yeah.
A scent person.
Yes.
Which made me feel like, I don't know, maybe it's one of these industries where if you like peel back the layers a little bit, you'll find that just like anything else, like, I don't know, like people have figured out how to really take cologne and scenting to the next level.
The thing is, scent, your scent is such a common thing that if such a culture exists, I'm sure there's people who are really into cologne and stuff.
Oh yeah, okay.
But if the act of leaving your scent places like a dog like was part of it, then to me that kind of that community would have risen to the surface of public knowledge.
But that's the thing, is I have no idea if that's the case.
No, I think you would know. It can't be the case, because if it was the case, you'd know.
We can't know what we don't know.
We can, yes, you can, because it's such an offensive, and it hits so many people that if it was the case, then you'd know, because so many people would talk about how annoying it was.
No, but that's what I'm trying to get at here, is that it's almost this idea that I feel like there is a community of people who appreciates this effort that goes into it.
Oh,
so
I
think I was slowly swirling towards this conversation of like, if people carry a scent, is there, I assume the answer to this question for you is there is a point where they have gone too far.
There is.
Okay.
For sure.
And yet, as we circle back to candles, the entire objective is to make your house smell of a scent. So speaking of candles, I have to tell you that today's episode of The Pop is brought to you by us.
Us?
Well, sort of us. It's brought to you by Carlin Brothers Coffee.
Ooh, it is brought to you by us.
It is, yes. Where we are launching a brand new product, and listeners to The Pop will be the very first people to hear about it.
Oh, it's so fitting for today's episode, too.
It is. Honestly, that really worked out incredibly and rather remarkably well.
It did.
So we have just introduced 3 new candles into the mix.
Yes, you can now put, yeah, I know, candles.
Candles.
Candles, they burn, they smell amazing, and you can own them.
We spent so much time selecting the, I'm going to call it flavors. Yeah. I like to call the scent of a candle a flavor. Rather,
right. Because it's like a slice of gum is akin to a flavor of candle.
A flavor of candle. So yeah. We have 3 flavors that I'm so ridiculously excited about. And actually, I can't even tell you which of the 3 I like the best. They are broomstick candle.
Yes.
Phoenix Fire,
mm-hmm.
And Sherbet Lemon.
Oh, ho, ho. All such magical sounding scents.
They really are, aren't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, picking these out, it really was a very involved process. We got this big case of like 25, 30 different scents of candles, and me and you and Scott and Jordan sat around in a circle for like 2 hours, like passing around smells and discussing and voting, and it was a real blast.
It was a really, really, really cool experience to put these together. And they're just honestly like, so we got like our first official batch that have been like branded. First off, the boxes they come in are so cool.
The boxes are really cool, but not as cool as like the logos, the artwork on them. I thought, yes, it came out so perfect, and it's hard to describe the smells, but it's, you know, broomstick candle. What do you think it smells like?
It smells like a brand new broomstick.
It's certainly not like armpit.
No, not even remotely like armpit. Not even remotely.
Absolutely not. I think the Phoenix Fire one has a bit of like a cinnamony.
A little bit.
Scent to it.
A little, yeah.
If that helps you.
It could be. I would say that if I were to define them by seasons,
yeah,
I think that Sherbet Lemon is probably the most summery.
I would agree with that.
Maybe even like late spring.
Yeah.
With Broomstick Candle, I think I would mark Broomstick Candle as like the autumn scent.
Yeah.
And Phoenix Fire as your winter scent.
I would agree with that assessment entirely. Yeah. If you're having trouble imagining like what a cinnamon scent is, just imagine you're in a room and there's a really big bird and it bursts into flames, and that's the scent.
It smells exactly like that.
It smells exactly like that.
For a split second, we thought Mr. Bob had exploded.
Exactly. But in fact, he hadn't. It was just the candle.
That's just what it was. So if you guys want to check these out, they are $30 a piece or $75 for all 3. They're available now at carlinbrotherscoffee.com. Also, we do have subscriptions to them, which is something that this is like the funniest thing about like the products that we come up with is so frequently I feel like it's solving my own like need for this exact thing. But I love candles at home, and very frequently like Allie and I will burn through them so quickly that I will find myself in this position of being like, we're out of candles again.
Ugh.
And so now you can have a subscription if you want, which gives you a 25% discount on each order,
right?
Or else you can just buy all 3 for the bundle price,
right? And if you're having like, if you want to have like a smelling party, you know, you just want to go through and pass the candles around, give them a whiff. Here's the great news. Here's how you cleanse your nose palate of scents. It's, wait for it, coffee beans.
This is a real thing.
Yes.
If you were to go to a store to buy perfume or cologne, almost guaranteed they're going to have little jars of coffee beans all over the place so that you can smell and then clear your scent and then smell again.
Exactly.
Yeah. So the good news is at carlinbrotherscoffee.com, we also sell coffee,
which you can not only use to cleanse your nose palate, but also to brew and drink hot brown morning potion.
Hot brown morning potion.
That's right.
It is straight up delicious.
It is.
And this, you know what? It's never been so hard to be excited about a brand deal ever.
No, this is very easy. It is very easy. All the candles smell very good. I'm very excited to start lighting them in my house, and I hope everyone enjoys them. Well, look, the objective of a candle is to fill a large space with a particular scent.
Yes.
The objective, in my mind, of cologne is to make your personal space smell a specific way.
Wait, okay, so...
Not to you.
Oh, okay, okay.
To make your personal bubble smell nice to other people.
Okay, okay. So for a second there, I thought you were going to say that the cologne was for your own purposes.
No.
Like, you use cologne so that you smell good to you.
No.
And I was like, That is, I have never thought of it that way before. Although, that being said, the other end of it, too, is, for one, you have natural sense that you have, like, off of you anyway. So, like, Alice has always said that for whatever it is, like, it, especially, like, if I have, like, finished working out, that, like, it is, like, a positive scent to her.
Yeah.
Which I do think goes back to, like, a much more, like, basic level of...
primal.
Sure, yeah, exactly. That there are... And I think that there's even, like, a little bit of science to, like, the attraction to, like, the specific person is, like, is whether or not you, like, receive their scent in a positive way.
Mm-hmm.
Which, actually, I do think is super interesting. Going back to high school, there was one girl that I dated that, like, the scent of her never jived with me at all.
Like, just her natural musk?
Just, like, her natural... I feel bad saying it like that, because she wasn't, like, you know, in any way not, you know, clean or anything like that.
No. But, I know what you mean.
Yeah, but there was this, like, really odd thing about her where it was, like, you know, we were both, like, involved in the same activities and stuff and, like, did things together. But then it was, like I think I remember even, like, hugging her for the first time. And I was, like, that's unexpected and odd.
Mm.
And it's, like, I've always, like, looked back on that and thought that, like, in some... very unusual way. It was like there was a crisscross or something in that kind of attraction.
Like, this isn't going to work.
Right, yeah.
We don't smell right together.
We don't smell right together. It does not jive. Yeah. This is like forest and armpit.
Forest and armpit. There you go. I guess, yeah. So I'm curious to know what the feedback is on the cologne scents that people choose.
I am also curious, and now I'm also slightly self-conscious. I hope that you would tell me, because I do think that over the past 5-6 years of my life, I have gone from, like, a very conservative single spritz to, I believe, 3.
Oh, I think, I mean, I'm normally a 3 spritzer.
Okay, 3's okay, 3's
that
fine.
That being said, I am not presently on any sort of cologne regime. I finished the bottle I was using a while ago.
No way. Finishing a bottle of cologne seems like the most unrealistic thing ever.
Oh my gosh. Let's touch on that. I remember when we were kids, we had a friend who was, like, maybe several years older than us. But I remember whenever we'd go to their house, because, like, our you know, parents were friends, we'd head over there. He had a desk, like, full, like, half covered in different colognes.
Jay, he's the guy who gets the silk woven vapors of stackable scents.
Here's the question.
I'm getting better at trying to express what I'm attempting to say in my techno science terms.
I have to imagine, to this day, he has not finished a single bottle.
Not a single one.
There's only so many different ways you can want to smell.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't, maybe I just don't, maybe I'm just not into scent culture. Maybe.
That's what I'm saying. I think you're not.
I think I'm not, but I also think if you are leaving a cloud behind, you're still doing it wrong.
Okay, so let me follow up on that then, because we touched on a little bit. Is it because it is obnoxious, or does it give you, like, a headache / make you feel, like, lightheaded? Because,
both.
Okay, because I think our mom growing up, I think even since we've been adults, I've, like, gifted mom a candle for Christmas, and I think that she was sort of like, what am I, like, I think it's literally still underneath her TV right now.
Mm.
It came in, it was like one of those ribbon wicks.
A ribbon wick.
So it's got, like, a particularly long wick. But I think she doesn't really like scents. Like, I think it just, like, gives her a headache.
Mm.
So she's not, like, the type of person who would just, like, you know, burn candles.
Right.
Regularly or whatever. Yeah. So most of the time, I feel like my interactions with scents almost never leads me to feeling lightheaded or having a headache.
Yeah.
For me, it's almost exclusively like, wow, they're, like, trying.
Yeah.
That's usually, like, my interpretation of that situation.
Yeah.
But I'm firmly convinced that maybe you're unaware of deep cut scent culture.
I am firmly convinced that the people leaving a cloud behind are firmly unaware.
That's fair. Okay, now we're definitely going to need feedback from all the colonels out there. Like, one, what is your regime? Because we need to know. And we'll have to circle back to this one, because now I'm super curious what the rest of the world does. It is one of those strangely private things that I feel like really doesn't come up very often. Like, you're probably not communicating. This actually happened in college, the conversation over whether or not you wad toilet paper or fold it.
Oh, God, you just opened a real war.
A real war. Is this a war? Is this a thing?
This is a hotly contested thing across the internet, I think.
Oh, okay. Well, I remember when I stumbled on this. First off, I thought that it was the funniest thing that had ever come up, because I had never considered it in my entire life.
Okay, you think it's funny because, like, the idea of someone folding their toilet paper was so hilarious?
Well, so that was the thing. I, like, literally, yeah, I think in my mind I was like, what are you doing? Like, origami? Like... Like, that was totally my stance on it. I was like, that is absurd and feels like a chronic waste of time. And then totally adopted it.
You're a folder?
I'm a folder.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Wow. Totally became a folder.
I am not a folder.
Really? No. Oh, spectacular. Mm. But no, I would say that literally probably until like my junior year of college, I think that there were, yeah, it's like one of those things you just like contemplate, like it sticks with you for such a long period of time. Mm-hmm. And then eventually it's like, you know what? I'm gonna try it.
It's exactly the kind of thing where you'd be sitting there feeling embarrassed to try it, even though you're in the most private of settings.
Right.
You're like, if I fold, like, people are gonna know. Like, but how could they ever?
How could they ever?
Like, the only way they're gonna know is if you talk about it. And
which we're doing on a podcast.
Well, now we are.
To the internet.
To the internet. Sorry. But there are so many times when I think of situations like this where I'm like, it's like some sort of private decision you're making or like private ritual where you're like, this is so embarrassing, or like, I don't want, it makes you feel bad, even though no one could possibly know.
I also would say that it ultimately does not matter.
Exactly.
In any way.
It does not matter, except that it defines who you are as a person. And if you fold toilet paper, you're crazy. This is a good edition of Strong Opinions about Weak Things.
That's exactly what I was gonna say. Yeah, it's like we're right back to our roots here on what makes the pop the pop.
We sure are, Ben. We sure are. Do you fold? Do you ball? There's a correct answer. Let us know, probably on the Reddit.
I would love it if there are people out there that like make origami cranes.
Oh, or my
like,
gosh.
You know, like really just go all out with it.
It feels like offensive to cranes.
That's fair. Poor cranes.
And it feels offensive to origami.
So apparently we've really just insulted everything all at once, because that's really, the entire world is divided into origami enthusiasts and crane enthusiasts. Where do you stand?
Exactly.
Choose a side.
My goodness.
Goodness me. Okay, so migrating away, as much as it pains me to do so, from toilet paper talk, I understand, and this is like one of those odd things that has happened as a result of quarantine, is that you and I normally spend more time together than we effectively do with anyone else that isn't our direct family.
Fact.
So there's been this odd thing that has started happening in our relationship that is unique over the past several years, at least since we've worked together, in that things are happening in your life that I don't know about.
Wow.
Yeah.
What's happening in my life that you don't know about? Well, you don't know.
I don't know. You're supposed to bring it up here so I can talk to, so I can learn all the things that are happening. Mm. You recently purchased one of these stationary Peloton bicycles.
Ah, yes, we did.
We
have the Peloton.
Okay.
Peloton bike.
A Peloton bike. Yes. Not the tread.
Not the tread. No, gosh. Have you seen the treadmill from Peloton?
I have seen it online.
My goodness. The treadmill is a solid $4,500.
Whoa!
It is outrageous. I mean, if you... it feels like the sort of thing where maybe it's in this weird zone of either... I can't tell. Sometimes things are like so expensive that like the act of purchasing them commits you to it.
Oh, for sure.
But this feels like maybe it's in that range, but also it's almost in like the... You'd already need to be such a committed runner to even consider such an amount.
That's also true.
You know?
That's also true.
I don't know.
There's also a strange category of cost associated with any type of item that I'm getting, where there occasionally will be the time where I'm like, this is expensive enough to where I am reassured that it is actually that good.
Oh, right. Like if you were trying to buy a Rolex watch and you walked into the jewelry store and it was like $20, you'd be like, well, wait a minute.
There's an enormous amount of clout around.
Something seems askew. Is this, could you trust it?
No, for $20 a Rolex? No, I would think
you'd
it was.
You'd be like, something is.
I would question that just to the basis of, this is a scam. It would make me not trust the establishment that I was in.
Isn't that weird though? Like if you're the jewelry store, you would have less success selling a Rolex watch at $20 than you would at, you know, I don't know what they cost, $500.
Oh yeah, that would be a very inexpensive Rolex.
Okay.
Yeah. This is absolutely something that I had observed going through the aquarium like industry part of the world. So I think I've talked about this before, but like certain strains of corals they get like names.
Yeah.
And then that name, it's almost like you start to have to, like if you own one of these particular strains, you need to have like kept track of who you bought it from within the like reef keeping community in order to ensure that you are actually selling like the OG mummy eye chalice.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So it's like, well, where did you get it from? Because I need to know that this is like the real one.
You got to cite your sources. Where's your work cited on this mummy eye?
Exactly. Exactly. Right. And it was like, I started to understand the reality of price being a feature of particular corals.
Interesting.
Yes. So like, it was always odd to me that certain pieces would manifest such massive ticket prices, like where it could be, you're talking about the size of like an eraser head on a pencil would be $1,200. Yeah, for My Miami Chalice, that's what it was called. It was the My Miami Chalice. I think it originally came from Worldwide Corals in Orlando, Florida, which is kind of ironic because Orlando, not Miami. Yeah. But just two different places. But it was like, it was not that remarkable. It was like an orange eye with like a blue surround, and then like eventually as it got big enough, it would have a green skirt.
Okay.
Is the three characteristics of it. So it was like, it was very pretty, but I think that really what it came down to is such a small group of people in the entire United States had one, and they chose to price it so aggressively that then it became this, like, it was like the first one that I'm aware of that cleared $1,000 per single, you know, unit.
Yeah.
And I think with that, they gave notoriety to it. Like it like became worth so much more than the cost of acquiring it,
right?
Even, you know, maybe it is just that rare in the great worldwide ocean to find such a combination of colors, and that's what
maybe.
But that's never something that's been satisfactorily explained to me to the point where all of a sudden something had value because it cost.
It sounds much more to me like this coral had a successful, like, you know, marketing PR team than it did a successful combination of colors and rarity.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. But to have been in this particular industry, which I would say is not good at marketing on the whole, like, I don't know that that's exactly what the aquarium industry is known for.
Right.
It would seem like that would be really handing out a large amount of credit for someone to have done intentionally.
Ah, but perhaps that's why they're so susceptible to it, because it's like, it's not expected in this realm.
Sure.
And so all of a sudden someone who's good at it, like, walks in and makes all these changes, and you're like, oh man. Like, it's in this world, only ever is it the case that rare things are priced high. So this priced high thing must be rare. Like, someone is taking advantage of the,
I'm gonna call it the collector's notion.
The collector's notion. There you go.
There you go.
It's been implemented. Okay, let's circle back to the Peloton.
Yes.
Let me, because it was like, the whole thing has been a journey in terms of like getting it and using it and like adjusting my own perceptions and stuff. It's been a really weird,
kind of like how some people can like stack sense and you're completely
not like that. Okay. Always obnoxious. What is your present perception of stationary bikes? Or what was, like, I don't know, if like we got our mother a Peloton bike for Christmas.
We did.
Which is probably affecting it now, but I don't know if you have any recollection of what your general opinion of stationary bikes or treadmills in the home was growing up.
No, I think I know kind of where you're going with this, and I think that my perception of them typically would have fallen somewhere in the same category as like a fad diet might have, where it's like, hey, I'm like doing, you know, Atkins or no carbs or something like that. Is that the same thing? Or is Atkins no carbs?
Atkins is low carb, yeah.
Low carb, okay. So it's forever been one of these things that my general perception of it is that it's something that does provide results, or a Bowflex might be an even really good example of it.
Yeah.
It's like, it will provide results if you continue to consistently use it. But the idea behind it is that it is like almost novel enough that you will do it for a period of time, see some results, and then eventually wane off of it, and then go back to whatever your status quo was prior. Because in my mind, there weren't that many ways to interact with it in a consistently unique manner. Mm-hmm. So like, for example, just regular cycling, it's the type of thing where maybe on day one to go out and ride 10 miles would be like the feat, you know, and like you're so proud of yourself and you could work up to 15 and 20. And then maybe eventually you're like taking trips to cool parts of, you know, your area specifically to ride up like a mountain or to see a particular overlook. Like, there are so many different directions that you can continue to take this hobby and explore it all over the place.
Right. Like in the real world.
in the real world. Whereas if you were to dedicate your fitness endeavors to something like an at-home stationary bike or a treadmill, I think that it's kind of like you can do it, but eventually it has an expiration date. Your interest in it has an expiration date. So like with the Bowflex, I remember it used to be advertised, I even think on Nickelodeon.
Oh yeah.
And it was this thing like where they show you the really cool commercial. And I think if they could get you all hyped for it, you'd eventually,
pull
it's all
like resistance band workouts. Yeah.
So it would show up and you'd be like, I'm going to get so fit and be like the guy in the commercial who probably did other exercises and was hired to do the Bowflex ad.
Yeah, because he was already already muscular.
Yeah. They didn't commit to average Joe, let him spend a year working up to
glad we finally have results so we can advertise this product.
Exactly.
We've been sitting on 1,000 of them in the warehouse.
We're ready to go all of a sudden. So that would be my long form interpretation of this. That being said, with our parents, they are big time out in the real world cyclists, right. And I think that they use the Peloton as their
like complimentary, right,
to help them get through the winter months.
Yeah. So this it's similar perception on my end. I think growing up, the number of like either the extended family members or friends' houses or just people's homes I would end up in where there was a stationary bike or a treadmill or an elliptical machine just collecting dust in the corner, like unused, clearly purchased with the best of intentions.
Yes.
But had largely become a thing taking up a lot of space in your house was 100%.
Okay.
There was zero people I had ever met who owned stationary cardio exercise equipment that had continued to use them.
Okay.
And so I think at some point in growing up, I just made up in my mind, treadmills, they're, at the gym, great, because you're already paying for the membership, you have to do it. But if you were buying something like that for your home, what a schmuck. You've fallen for it. You bought the thing. It's in your house. You can't get rid of it. It's there. You spent the money. You used it for a few days. Great. Now it's there forever. Okay. This was my perception. I'm never getting one of these things because I'm never that's going to happen to me. I'm going to buy into the excitement and then it's just going to sit there.
Right.
That was my perception.
Popcorn Culture is supported by Arena Club. Okay, so you guys know that I love trading card games and that me and Ben are big time collectors of Pokemon cards. It's that childhood fantasy of finally being able to use adult money to buy those highly coveted rares of our youth. And even in our office, we have not one, but two full display cases with some of our all time favorite rarest cards that we've pulled. But something I did not know existed when I was a kid in my youth was the grading process for trading cards or sports cards or whatever you're collecting. To me, it was just a rare Charizard is a rare Charizard. It doesn't matter if it's been hanging out in my pocket with my lucky paperclip. Turns out it does matter, and kind of a lot, because if you get your cards professionally graded, it can add huge value. And then not only that, but once they're graded, they will seal them in that pristine condition inside of a plastic case, or what's known in the industry as a slab. And that's where Arena Club steps in, because it's like buying a booster pack, but it's for a pre-graded card. Now, I know that can take maybe a second to wrap your head around, because you're opening physical cards on a digital platform, which means you open the pack online and see your pulls where they can be added to your showroom for the world to see, but you can also request them to be sent to you at any time. So they have got a ton of pre-graded cards, and then you will get to randomly open one, and then they'll keep it for you, or they can send it to you, or you can just sell it or trade it online or whatever you want to do. But whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform you have got to check out. And right now, you can get 10% off your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/poppop, which, wow, that is a crazy offer. 10% off a $400 slab pack. That's $40 right there. Anyway, that's arenaclub.com/poppop for 10% off your first purchase.
Popcorn Culture is sponsored by Shopify. Y'all are likely aware of the fact that we have our very own Shopify store, Carlin Brothers Mercantile, and it's hard to imagine not having it now, but arriving at the decision to open our own web store was a big one.
In fact, we started our journey on the interweb back in 2012 and didn't finally open up shop until 2018. And a huge part of that is just not knowing where to start, but that's where Shopify steps in. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, which is a fancy way of saying it's a really easy and effective way to start an online business, no matter if you're operating out of your garage or have like a whole building or three or something. Once we were set up, our biggest concern was trying a new product, only to discover no one was interested in it. But Shopify is powered with so many reports, more than you can even imagine. And this is so handy because it allows us to use data to better provide what folks are actually interested in. It's so easy to use, but even if you do find yourself caught in a jam, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/poppop. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/poppop now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/poppop.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So leading back, just, you know, let's rewind maybe like 6 months or so, Beth, my wife, expresses to me that, oh, what if we got like a Peloton? And I remember almost just like laughing out loud, like, we are not the, like, okay, yeah. We're not, no, like, you know, we're not going to be those should people who buy into the stationary bike.
Should
all
we
right?
go get three different bottles of cologne while we're at it?
Yeah, right. Like, that's hilarious. We're not, you know, okay, we're not getting suckered in here. That was, and like, I think it like was very like, I don't know, offensive to her that I was like dismissing it so out of hand. Like, that's a ridiculous idea.
Sure.
How dare you? But in my mind, this was like the accepted, like, you know, it, like I had reinforced it so much in my mind that this was like the widely accepted opinion of stationary bikes.
Sure.
Like everyone knows stationary bikes are bad investments. Like, of course, no, you know?
Sure.
That's where I was at. So anyway, I'll also tell you that I am not someone who even owns a bike
right.
as an adult, which I always am a little embarrassed about. I feel like I should own a bike. I have done light road cycling in the past. I like biking. It's fun. And I have done some spin classes throughout my life as well. And I've always really enjoyed like going to a spin class.
Well, I was going to say, I thought you were going to say just enjoyed cycling. Like we grew up like as avid annual watchers of the Tour de France.
Yes.
Like it was an occasion in our household where it was like the month of July while the Tour de France was on, it was like, we all watched it together. You know, like we would be like downstairs in the morning with dad.
Yeah.
And like, going through, we had our favorite cyclists from like around the world.
Oh yeah, not you know? Just like Lance Armstrong.
Although Lance Armstrong was like
really let us down here
a little bit. Yeah, it's like growing up with childhood heroes being Lance Armstrong and Michael Vick has been a real bummer.
Oh, that yes. That was, oh man, imagine being a fan of the Virginia Tech Hokies pre-Michael Vick arriving and then being like, oh my God,
the best!
This has never happened. Yeah. This person changed the sport. Oh, why did you do that? Just the actual worst thing you could have done.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're not talking about Michael Vick right now. We're talking about stationary bikes.
We sure are. Let's keep going.
Let's not go down that alleyway. That's no good. That's no good. But so, right, like cycling always been very present in our lives.
Yes.
Just never really interested in owning a stationary bike or anything like that. And like, you know, Peloton to me, that's the name of the group of cyclists in the Tour de France.
Yep.
I would bet that today, Peloton means the stationary bike to most people. They don't even realize it's a reference to the group of cyclists.
Right. So that is a big thing. And it's actually, like we used to make jokes about it, like on the cross country team. There was like 1 year where I think it might have been my senior year. I got everybody into watching the Tour de France.
Of course you did.
And then we would like narrate our runs as if we were the Peloton. And so like as somebody somebody would like move into like the front to like, you know, break the wind for everybody else behind.
Yeah.
We would be like, Ryan moving to the front of the pack right now. Like, yeah. His turn at the front. Got to be careful on that slippery lead paste paint coming down the Alps.
That is hilarious.
So yeah, we would always have these like really funny things. But yeah, so the big blob of cyclists that all ride together is in fact called the Peloton.
Right. So anyway, though, then this past Christmas comes around and we got our mom a Peloton bike.
We did.
Because she wanted one and she's already a big cyclist. So to me, this wasn't like, I know this won't sit dormant.
Right.
Because this is like a, oh, it's raining outside, I'll use it then sort of thing.
Right.
Our dad has had like a, not a stationary bike, he had like a device he could hook up his road bike to that would turn it into a stationary bike.
It's called a trainer. It is so exhausting.
It is so exhausting and super boring, honestly. Yes.
He does it. He has his aquarium set up in the basement. He would like go and set it up and just ride while watching his aquarium.
It's the most dad hour of his life.
I always think it's so admirable. I'm like so impressed. Actually, yeah. With both of our parents, their commitment is unbelievable. But anyway,
unbelievable. Yeah. So anyway, our mom gets it and like she loves it. And slowly I'm like starting to come around to like the idea of owning one of these bikes.
Yes.
You know, and then the thing that really pushed it over the edge, I think, was the quarantine.
Okay.
And like I had accepted like, okay, it wouldn't be the worst thing to like own one. But then we were suddenly stuck in the house and, you know, we need a way to work out quickly and not leave.
So let me stop you right there.
Yeah.
Why not pour a concrete pad in your backyard? Because I too ran into this exact same dilemma and I'm realizing we've solved the problem very differently.
Right. Me too. I'm thinking that we did solve the problem very differently. I don't think I have a good spot to put a concrete pad in my backyard.
Okay, fair enough. I'll take that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's better than it's a bad idea.
Obviously, you're using it, so
I am using it.
It's only a bad idea if suddenly you just have a square of concrete where used to you have had grass.
Oh, sure. In which case, I would set up the most baller four square court
right
in the entire Roanoke area.
Right.
And it would be like, we'd have tourneys, man.
Yeah.
Tourneys.
Dude, your four square game in elementary school involve a lot of like crazy trick rules and stuff?
I have zero recollection. I don't even know if I know how to play the game of Foursquare, if I'm being entirely honest with you.
Ben, the whole point of Foursquare is to like work your way around the square until you're in like the server spot, right?
Okay.
Right, so you have like spots 1 through 4.
So you move in Foursquare.
Yeah.
You're effectively teaching me the rules right now.
So yeah, you have the server spot, and then the person, you know, directly to their right is the person next in line to move up into the server spot.
Okay.
The person to their right would move into their spot. You know, whoever gets out, that person walks off, and everyone below them gets to move up again. So everyone is against the server, because you want to be the server.
Oh, I see.
Right, so the other three players should be trying to get that person out, so everyone gets to move up.
Okay.
Right, that's it. Anyway, we had lots of different fun rules. Like, I don't know, like there was one called jackpot where if someone like failed to bounce it to you and you caught it before it bounced, that was jackpot. That person's out.
Ooh.
Right. We had something called rocket, which just feels like straight up cheating, where if it would come to you, you could just slam it, like two hand slam it into their square. Good luck getting it. Then it would just be like, everyone would announce it as it was happening, though. Like, the whole class would be in on this and be like, rocket, boom!
Rocket!
And it would, like, you know, I don't even know, the ball would go flying way up in the air. And it's like, did the person ever get it and, like, successfully land it in another square? I don't know. We had one for, I don't know why it was called voodoo. This is just when you looked one spot and hit the ball in another direction. I don't know why I remember all these things.
Because it's you.
Yeah,
and this is
me.
The frustration of being related to
this
you.
This is the kind of things I would internalize as a child. Like, I need to remember this because eventually it's going to come into play again and I'll be ready.
And I'll be ready and no one else will know.
Ready, right? So when my 33-year-old game of Foursquare comes up, you better be ready because you're going to get rocketed.
Everybody's
going to be like,
what?
Wait a minute. I'm like, you don't know about rocket? Well, I do.
Watch out for my voodoo!
Yeah, watch out, voodoo, boom, no look! Which isn't even, it's not even like you have to announce, it's like announcing it makes it less effective.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say.
The
like,
point is, just do it.
It almost seems like the incantation of this action is part of what makes it glorious, though.
Yeah.
Is like screaming rocket is just like,
yeah, right.
That's part it's of the like, fun.
That makes it okay to just throw the ball away. Like, you're out, loser. Anyway, this is detour down Foursquare Lane. Let's once again, maybe we'll go back. We got the Peloton.
Okay, so you have
the Peloton. Beth finally wore me down. We're calling it the Mother's Day gift this year.
Okay,
yeah, got it. And I have to say, I've been converted. It is. It is quite fun.
Is it awesome?
It is, I would say, I don't feel unjustified in my beliefs about stationary bikes growing up.
Okay.
Because there was, you're right, there was no, like, new way to interact with them.
Right.
But the Pelotons, like, the way it works is that, you know, you have a screen right in front of you, and what you're supposed to do is basically, like, go into, like, a class, if you will, which can be live, like, with other people. They do them live over the internet or whatever. Or you can just, like, pre-ones, and you're just taking a spin class in your basement, and you would think, is that effective? And the answer is yes, it is effective.
I bet. Okay, so my experience, I've only been to one, maybe two spin classes in my entire life.
Yeah.
Few.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was with the high school girlfriend who we had opposing smells.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that was who you were talking about.
That is who I was talking about. I'm glad that you know who this is.
Oh,
that's,
I know
so
who, because I think I went to that same spin class with you.
Oh, you did. Yeah, you did. Yeah, I had just run 10 miles that morning and then went to a spin class, and it was purely to attempt to impress this person.
Ah.
And I thought I was going to die.
Yeah.
The thing about spin class that is so unusual to just riding a bike is you drastically underestimate how much the wind is cooling you when you are moving through space out in the real world.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you are pedaling and there is no wind to cool you, you sweat so much. I was like a bone dry human being my whole life. Like, I would go out and run with the cross country team and get back, and like our coach would be dripping wet, and like the other athletes would be dripping wet, and I would be like,
fine.
I would have like dry salt on my lips or something from like some.
Sounds more like you were just dehydrated, if that's the case.
Maybe I lived my whole life dehydrated.
Let me ask you, do you think that in our household, drinking water was not like a really important thing?
I wouldn't say it was emphasized.
I would agree with you. I don't think it was emphasized. Maybe not. I don't know. Not certainly not in the way that my wife drinks water. Like, she has commented me many occasions, like, it surprises me how little water you drink and how you manage to get by. And I'm like, what do you mean?
I drink plenty.
I have a glass after I brush my teeth at night. What do you, like?
That's plenty.
I drink water. I had a LaCroix with lunch. What?
This feels like something that I think you have become like transfixed on, because you're very good at adopting like the right habits, I would say.
Mm.
And it seems like drinking water is this one that has like eluded you, where
I've made it so far into life.
I feel like on multiple occasions you have like made videos about the efforts that you have taken to attempting to drink more water.
Yes.
That have apparently gone like underfulfilled in terms of integrating into your new life routine.
My wife not only has several different water bottles, but she will have one near her at all points in the day. There is a water bottle next to her. And this, like, I don't even own a water bottle. You know, like, if the times of day I go and just go to the sink and fill up a glass of water to consume is never.
Never?
Never.
Goodness.
No. Like, I drink other things. Or I will drink, like, maybe, like, yeah, we have a lot of LaCroix at our house.
Okay.
And I will drink that maybe with lunch. But it's not even because I'm like, man, you know what I should do? I am underhydrated right now. It's more like I am going to be thirsty because of what I'm eating. And LaCroix seems like a flavorful way to not be unhealthy.
Yeah, no, I get
with
that.
My drink choice.
I would say that I went through a period of time, especially after college, where I was a little more stagnant with my exercise and where I was still drinking like soda regularly.
Uh-huh.
And I would say that like one of the most noticeable shifts in my life was when I think because of you guys, you and I think there was one day I was doing yard work and Beth came out and handed me a coconut LaCroix. And I was like, okay, I'm in. And it like, I literally like cold turkey gave up on like Coca-Cola overnight.
There you go.
Where I was buying like way too much.
Way too much. Like three Cokes a day?
Like, oh yeah. I would say three Cokes a day, definitely. I think I was buying three 12 packs. They had like a 3 for $9 deal a week with my like weekly groceries. And that was like, that was the type of thing that I would get as like, well, I need to go get like my drinks for the week.
Right.
Like if I don't have those, what will I drink?
What will I consume?
Yeah. And so that was very noticeable in terms of just like that shift, it was like, wow, I look better.
Like, what do you know?
How about that?
This is cutting down liquid calories is always the quickest and fastest way, that like the easiest thing often to cut out from your diet that will make a drastic difference in your appearance.
Yes.
Like, if you don't want to exercise, if you don't want to commit to some crazy diet, just commit to water.
Just commit to water.
And this will, like, if you cut out, like, because people, it's so easy to rationalize certain, like, drinks as healthy.
Yeah.
Gatorade, healthy. Orange juice, healthy. It's fruit.
Right.
No, they are not. Orange juice, not healthy. Gatorade, not healthy.
Sugar.
Sugar. Well, sugar. Both of those things are just sugar.
Well-branded sugar.
Well-branded sugar. Gatorade is great if you have just finished a 5-mile run. In which case, chug it down.
If you are
mid-soccer game, have a Gatorade. If you are on the bike, go ahead and have some Gatorade. Do you know what? Otherwise, don't kid yourself. It's just sugar.
It's just sugar. Yeah. May as well drink better sugar.
That's right. You may as well just be having a Coke.
Right. Oh, man, a Coke.
Yeah.
I haven't had one in years.
Years, really?
Literally. Oh, yeah. No, it's probably... I do drink ginger ale, I would say, is the one soda that I will have. Even then, it's usually like more typically like a part of like a cocktail where I'll have like a bourbon ginger. But otherwise, yeah, I don't think I've had a Coke since we lived together.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's impressive. I've had a Coke in the last month.
Wow.
Sure. Incredible. We have, yeah. So let's see. I have, of course, in like a constant caffeine. The other thing I just drink is coffee.
Oh, yeah. I drink a lot. Way too much coffee.
I'm thirsty. What should I drink? Coffee.
Yeah.
I'm drinking coffee right now. Which is the opposite of water. It's like a diuretic. It dehydrates you, so.
Yes, yeah.
By dehydrating, I mean it means you have to pee a lot.
Yes.
Which then, yeah. So anyway, that's how it works. It's not like drinking it is like squeezing water out of you or something.
Sure.
Yeah.
Jazzy J, now Dr. Jazzy J.
Yeah, that's right. Laying down those
like
drink choices.
Apparently, yeah. I feel like you were shockingly informed on the health benefits or detriments of liquids.
Well, as you say, I've made several videos about my attempts to be better about drinking water. I would say the most effective I ever got at it was when I had a regular day job and I did the math. And I made a video about that. I did make a video about it. I did the math and realized that, like, one, the act of filling up my water bottle and then the amount of time it would force me to go to the bathroom was just a tremendous way to waste time. It was like, this will take up over the course of like a month, maybe like a whole day's worth of time.
Where you're just walking to the restroom and back to your office.
Right. And filling up your cup.
Okay.
Yes. So that was like, hey, drinking water. This is like a thing to do that doesn't work. That was like really effective. That has always been true for me though. Like a huge motivating factor to me is don't have to work. Nothing will make me work harder than not having to work then.
I do understand that. I feel like there was this period of time in my life where I was doing my aquarium job, which is like, it's like one of these jobs that the work doesn't stop just because you're not there.
Yeah.
And that was always like a really unusual problem where it's not like, oh, it's someone else's turn to be responsible. I can turn my brain off. I don't have to worry about this.
Right.
Almost always for the first like 3 years out of college, if I was going on vacation, I had to come up with very clever ways that it would be okay for my clients' aquariums to not see me for that whole week.
Right.
Which usually meant that leading up to my vacations, I was working like three times as hard attempting to make sure that everything was going to be okay.
Yeah.
And then pretty much I spent the entire vacation just
worried.
Stressed and worried.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was really not very good times.
Not an effective vacation.
No, not so much.
Yeah.
Not so much.
Yeah. I understand. It's like, this is why you needed just more use so that you could be like, okay, I'm off the clock. You other person, you are now on call. Like no one has to be there, but it's your night to be on call. So if something goes wrong, you got to do it.
Yeah. You got to do it.
It's up to you now.
That's interesting though. So you're so highly motivated by not having to work.
Well, certainly it's much less the case now where we own our own company and I super enjoy the work we do.
Well, that's
true. It's not nearly as much of a factor. It's like when you have a day job and it's like, this is just what you do for work. This is like, you have to do it because you need money sort of thing.
Right. Yeah.
It's like, yeah, this is like if ever my boss came around and was like, hey, finish up everything. If you finish up everything you got to work on the day, head out at one. Take an early, you know, jump on the weekend. It was like, let's knock everything out real. I am 1 o'clock. I'm out of here.
I would have been here till six if you didn't say that. But exactly. Now exactly. I will be out of here at one.
At one, you can boy. If you really wanted me to get more, you should just tell me that if that was my working operation every day, I'd have been so productive.
That is, okay, I do think that there's a lot to be said for that. This is like one of the philosophies that I feel like I tend to carry with my managing style, which is maybe terrible and not recommended, but I'm going to talk about it anyway.
Okay.
Is this idea that I care so much more about the job being done than hours being clocked.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the end of the day with me, most of the time, it's like, as long as everything is complete, then I'm very rarely going to be in a fuss if you were done at 2 o'clock.
Right.
You know, like that's sort of like my philosophy on it. And it probably comes from having never worked like a proper job before, mm-hmm. where somebody was like expecting me just to be there until five.
Yeah.
And then maybe understanding the merits of it. Are there merits to just being there till five, because that's like your responsibility to,
well, so like, very often in like an office setting, it's not, even if like there's stuff, it's that you might need to respond to stuff until then. Like the understood work day is until five, so you might be getting like emails or requests or phone calls from people outside the building,
sure,
that you need to respond to, because they might need stuff from you and they're expecting you to be there until this time of day.
What a devastating thought.
I know. Terrible. I think there are probably merits to it. I felt like so often at my old job, it was almost like even if you were like leaving at five, that was like, that's a little bit wow. You don't really care, do you? Like you're just waiting for the clock to hit five and then you're sort of out of here. Like, you know, I felt like there was a very like toxic mentality around like your commitment to the job based on when you left.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Oh,
which is, there's all these, and I guarantee you many people listening know what I'm talking about, where like the idea of if it's 8 to 5, but you're like a salary person,
right?
You know, if it's hourly, they want you out the moment, they don't want to pay you overtime or anything
of course
like that.
Yeah,
but if you're salaried and it's like, and you're leaving right then, it's like, well, I see, you're just here for the bare minimum, I guess, huh? All right, take note of that.
See, that's so terrible.
It is. Yes. Agreed. It is not good. Oh, especially because in my particular situation, the first week, they were like, hey, so basically the way it works here is you can like arrive at like 8 and leave at 5, or you can arrive at, you know, 9 and leave at 6, whatever works better for you. And I was like, well, I want to be out of here early every night, so I'm going to get here at 8.
Right.
Problem is, like, any superior I had at that job always chose the other at like from 9 to 6 or whatever.
Okay.
So even if they are leaving right at 6, it doesn't matter, because like they are there later.
Right, right, right. So their perception is watching you leave the office before they left the office.
Exactly.
While also not having observed the fact that you got to work before they
to
work.
You didn't get the credit for getting there an hour early.
Right, yeah, you were just being, oh.
Only penalized for leaving on time.
This is miserable.
Is what it felt like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there was also a lot of, you know, we had to work a lot of events.
Yes.
So there was a lot of come in this week, you know, you had to go in on the weekends or late at nights and stuff like that.
Right.
Stuff like that. And it would often be a lot of, oh, we're not going to pay you overtime. Just take those hours off of the next day or whatever. But it was never like, how long did you work? 3 hours. Okay, we'll see you at 11. You know, it was like, oh, you were here all night, 6 hours. Just come in at like 10 tomorrow. It's like, it's not really the same.
It's like, well.
Yeah. Anyway, not to throw anyone under the bus. I mean, I learned a lot at that job and I had good experience as well. But
there is no doubt about that. That is the weird thing about your traditional background. Like, I feel like you and I always have, we have come to the same place and we are now like partners together in this business that we do together, where I have exclusively been employed by me.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
So I feel like very frequently, I feel like the guy that like went and lived out of his van, like I feel like this mega free spirit compared mm-hmm. to your like hardcore, like corporate,
I'm
9 to 5.
I wouldn't say like hardcore.
If I were to describe you in two categories, it would be love of beanbags.
Oh, okay.
Followed closely by corporate.
That's me bringing down the hammer on everybody all the time.
But like also with cheese doodles, you know, from your beanbag jar.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. No, I'm really, I feel like I'm painting you in an absolutely non-accurate way.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too, about beanbags and corporate.
Corporate.
I think largely there were many structures, like the longer we're in business, there are like many structures that were in place at my old job that I like can recognize those were the benefits of those structures.
The value of
those, that was the value of these things, right? That maybe seemed superfluous, like this seems like an extra step, or like, do I have to fill this out, or like whatever. And it's like, I understand much more like, okay, this was a calendar. Everyone had a shared calendar. Everyone, like, you schedule a meeting, everyone shows up. You don't have to like go check with everyone. You send out requests. You know, it's like, there were good systems in place. There was definitely a lot of redundant systems.
Yeah, the department of redundancy department.
There, yeah, for sure. There was a bunch of like stuff that was like, that actually was pointless. But I think I have tried to like do a good job of like incorporating just the things that were effective, or trying to, and
yeah, just a sprinkling of corporate.
Exactly. Yes.
Anyway, guys, we have so many things that we covered in today's pop. If you guys have any thoughts at all on any of them, you can email us at popcornculturepod@gmail.com. Otherwise, we're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Reddit. We can keep the conversation going. It seems like we have such varying amounts of feedback that make it into the show, but you could rest assured that I read your feedback.
Oh my gosh. There are so many people who have submitted funny words that their family used for stuff, specifically farts, I think, given our own example. I'm going to run through a bunch of them real quick before we close out.
Do it.
Because I thought they were fun. This one comes from Austin. They said, as a kid, I tended to move around a lot for a short while. When I lived in Minneapolis, Kansas, the accepted word for a fart was fluff.
Fluff.
Like, that's your, like, can you, that's so funny. Oh, did you just fluff?
It does sound like, for some reason, such a more acceptable word, like fart. Seems yeah. like this, like, it, like the word itself kind of seems like it has like one of those pig pen style clouds around it.
Yeah.
You know, like where it's like, it's just like, it yeah. feels a little dirty.
Oh.
Fluff is like so much more like, yeah, very understandable.
This next one is maybe a little too tactile for me. It's
okay.
A little too descriptive, I think, but I think it's really funny. This is from Abby. She says, also for farts, my mom's family referred to them as bumpy burps. And I was like, you like feel it.
Bumpy burps.
Bumpy burps. Ugh. I don't know about that.
Yeah, that's, I almost get like the idea of like people who like refer to their bottom as like a bum.
Oh.
I don't think that's what they're going for, maybe, but like a bum burp.
Oh, I'm thinking like bumpy.
Yeah,
like,
no, I get that. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Okay.
But so this is, I'm trying to imagine like when, like what your action is when you let this slip out in public. Like, oh, who just bumpy burped? Like you were like with your friends, like, oh, who just ripped a bumpy burp?
Oh, ripped it.
People are like, oh, what now? Oh man. This one's not fart. This is a word. The Kerrigan says, when I was little, I came up with the word bips for the TV remote. So now if you want the remote, you say pass the bips. Which is
weird.
A fun one. Like, yeah, I could see that one be like, but I could see that one slipping out in like a, like, you know, you're at college and you're like, hey, can you pass the bips?
People
like,
coming in for Big Fudge. For some reason, I sort of get that. Like the buttons on a remote almost feel like they could be referred to as bips.
Oh, yeah.
Like each
yeah.
of the, like the rubberized, like little buttony things.
Yes.
Bips. I get like that.
It.
Okay.
I like it. Lisa has, oh, okay. This is for, I think, water wings.
Like what you would wear, like when you're learning to swim.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, you wear them in the pool. They hold your arms up. They call them Popeyes.
Oh, like because of the, yeah. like it looks like you have muscles. It
looks like you have big muscles.
That's perfect.
I like that one. That's pretty good.
That's just headcanon.
New headcanon. This is another one. This is another one for farts. It's maybe my favorite. best friends and family. This is from Riley. Called them Bonquees.
Bonquees? It sounds kind of French.
Who just Bonqueed?
Bonquees.
It sounds like...
or is it bonkies? Bonkies. Like Bonkies.
Oh yeah, how are we? Bonkies or bonkies?
Bonkies. It does, it feels like a, like it's pre-pluralized.
Yeah, who just ripped a bonkie?
A bonkie.
Was that just a bonkie? I don't know.
Yep. Okay.
So that's some of the other words people had for stuff that was just their family. It was pretty fun. I love that feedback.
That's really good. Yeah. Otherwise, guys, if you would like to support the pop over on Patreon, you can help determine who is the host each week. That is patreon.com/popcornculture. We have three tiers. One, or each of those tiers comes with the same rewards, one of which is after the final pop, which is a bonus 10 minutes of listening that you can get exclusively to patrons, where we just continue to discuss questions that you guys may have asked. Also, just want to give a shout shout out to the following patrons who do support us on Patreon. We have Morton Madsen, Ray LaFleur, Mike Hansen, Vicky, Zara Hoffman, Luis Pope, Nick Barker, Mitchell Harlow, Kim Gibson, Labyrinth, Babe68, Jason Cuse.
That's what I'm seeing.
And Zach Campbell. So thank you to all of you guys for your support over on Patreon.
Yes, thank you so much. We truly appreciate it. And until next time, pop, pop.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.